Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's June 8th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast this side of the Milky Way. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Oh my God, Scott Long is back.
Oh, hey, hold on here for a minute, Chris. For some reason, my TV keeps coming on. And only Jeannie can turn it off. I know she's getting pissed about driving all the way over here and turning my TV off. This is so weird. Has this happened to you ever?
She's got some electrical field in her that somehow allows her to control electronics. I don't know what the deal is. I'm glad you listened to the show, though. It's good to know that you're actually paying attention to things.
I did listen to the show, and I have a couple comments about it, but I do have to let you know that I did punk you a little bit, Chris. I did hire a kid to hang outside your hotel suite with a second remote control and play with you. He was in the next room, too. He was messing with the plumbing a little bit, too. And then I gave him an extra $6 and a Zagnut bar, and he actually replaced all the billboards on I-95.
And I was so... I knew if it was on, if we were driving together, you'd have been like, duh, that's 75, not 95, or whatever. And then I would have... Or I-4, or whatever. And I would have been like, oh, okay. And it wouldn't even been an issue. We would never even had it on the show. But because you weren't there, literally for 2 hours, I'm like... Where are those billboards, man? I can't believe this. It drove me crazy, and Jean's never been that way, so she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, I'm telling you, everywhere you see fruit in a bag for a dollar, there used to be a life starts at 14 hours or whatever the stupid thing was. And then I realized I was on the wrong road. So.
Well, yeah, I know it's tough for you. There are two major freeways in Florida, and it's tough to keep them... Keep them separate there for you. But no, I very much enjoyed the shows. In fact, actually, I mean that in all honesty, we were joking at the couple of meetups that I was going to be replaced. And when I listened to the shows, I was worried about being replaced because Mike and Lee did wonderful jobs. But just a couple quick comments. I'm not going to dwell on the last 2 weeks too much here. But one, it was a yin and yang show, wasn't it? You know, I listened to the whole Fasto show and I'm like, where is the poker? Are they ever going to talk about poker? And then I listen to the Lee show and I'm like, guys, there's something other than poker to talk about. So I think he did a good job of balancing it over the 2 weeks of what a proper show would be with Scott in the mix. But a couple quick notes. The show is almost the exact amount of time from the time that I can turn on my approved electrical devices in the airplane and when I have to turn them off and stow my tray table on the flight from Detroit to Tampa.
Wow.
An interesting factoid there. And it is also long enough for 7 innings of a Clearwater Threshers game.
Oh, man, you listed it while you're at the game?
Well, you know, here's the thing, and I was talking to a couple of the folks at the meetup about this, too, and, you know, I get this question a lot. I'm like, you know, how... you know, did you listen to this other show, you know, 2 Plus 2 or some, I don't know, some other show? And I'm like, you know, I don't listen to the other shows. And they kind of give me the look like, oh, you arrogant jerk. And I'm like, no, it's not that. I don't even listen to my own show. And it's because, of my many talents in this world, I do not have I'm not blessed with the talent of being able to listen to something, focus on it, and do anything else, including chewing gum at the same time. And so, you know, to listen to our show again after hour, you know, I know what our show is. To listen to that for 2 hours and then not work or do anything else, it's tough to do, and especially to do it for another show. So I don't listen to any of them, right?
Mm.
And it was a real treat to actually listen to our show and not really know what was going to happen. Obviously, I did the show notes for you guys, but so I knew kind of the topics, but not knowing that the directions and where you're going to go and your comments. So, I mean, it's a pretty entertaining show that we put together.
Well, a couple of things helped contribute to that, too. One, it was so nice to have a broadcasting partner who didn't interrupt every single thing that I was trying to get across.
What are you talking about?
And then, of course, the and us didn't actually surface throughout the show, so it actually was a timely, crisp show that moved along nicely. So, you know, a couple of things that, you know, you contribute to the show that we could probably do without. So
yeah, well, let me remind you of one stellar moment. Mike, and I'm sitting there, say Moriarty! And I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, you think this is easy what we do every week. Uh-huh. Once you're on the spot, you forget everything you ever know. And the second thing, really, you know, I emailed Connor Boyle, who did the mailbag, I think, last week with Lee, right? And I had apologized to him. But, you know, he actually sent a very detailed mailbag question, and I know you get your panties in a bunch anytime you have to read more than 7 words in a mailbag, so I edited it way down, thought I got the essence of it, and then you and Lee go off, oh my god, you cast 35 times, it went on for 4 hours, and I'm like, get to the question! And he did have a specific example about the ace-queen, and I just edited it out, and had I been on the show, I would have been able to bring it back around there. But you guys had a great conversation about it anyhow, so it's not critical. I just wanted to apologize to Connor because I know how that must feel if you're at home listening, like, they're telling me I should have given it to them, and I did.
Yeah, I felt after he wrote me in, and he's like, Chris, I'm surprised you guys talked about it on the show because Scott already emailed me with the answer, and I was happy with that answer, but then you guys came on the show, and I was like, so I wrote him back saying, well, here's why we didn't know what to say, because we, you know, it's so vague, and then I explained to him all the reasons why we couldn't have done it if we had these situations, blah, blah, blah. Then, like, the next morning I wake up, and there's an email from you saying, oh, man, I edited it down, sorry. I'm like, oh, I felt so bad, because here I am, you know, I mean, guess criticizing him for not giving us more details on what he wanted, and then he did do it, so... Connor, yeah, I feel bad too, even with the explanations in my emails, I gave him some more stuff to think about, so he got a lot out of that letter, so yeah.
I was just ensuring my long-term survival.
Yeah, that's what you sabotaged the show so that you'd feel more important, I think. But you had a good trip?
Yeah, a wonderful trip. I hesitate to say a trip for the lifetime, but it was up there. It was one of the best ones we've ever did. I mean, fortunately, I get to spend most of it with my wife. She was with me, and we saw some really cool things. Went all the way out to Deadwood, Mount Rushmore, and the Bear Country USA, and all kinds of touristy stuff like that. And then obviously stopped at quite a few poker rooms. And we'll give a big, actually a probably too verbose recap of it in coming weeks. But we got a couple shows that we needed to get in before we did it. And, you know, we're going to talk about our antis, our annual reader choice survey this week. And then next week is our anniversary show, right?
Yeah.
It falls exactly on our anniversary. 7 years of doing this. I have not missed a show yet. Thanks to the magic of the hotline. You, of course, you know, oh, I'm sick. I got a big surgery.
You know, and I thought about not playing your second clip when Lee was on. I really did, because I'm like, here's Scott calling in again to tell us the exact same thing he said before. I'm like, what would he do if I just didn't put him on the show?
Well,
would his head burst?
Because you edited out the humor there in the long-time listener, second-time caller. So,
you know why? Actually, because you dropped out, like, in it. So it's like
that was the worst part of this trip is I could never use my cell phone.
Yeah, so I had to cut it to where it was, you know, a clean actual clip. That was why. So I decided to at least run that for you. I said I don't want his head to explode, or, you know. Of course, the other thing was that by putting you on the show, your head got so big that you fit right in that Mount Rushmore when you were there.
That's true, absolutely. I spent half the week carving. But no, we'll get to the road trip here in a couple of weeks, but I did want to get a little flavor of it in this week. We did have our great meetup at Canterbury Park.
Minnesota.
In Minnesota. And we'll talk more about this when we get to the show. But we ended up playing the 6:30 tournament there rather than get a cash game going. And, of course, we were scattered amongst different seats, so none of us got to play together initially. Kind of defeats the whole purpose of the meetup, but anyhow. But we played the tournament there. And I really... Something like a light bulb went out when I was playing in this tournament, and I didn't play very long, which we'll talk about at some point here. But when I was playing, I really kind of was paying attention to people a little bit more than I normally do, maybe. And maybe it was just because we had a different cast of characters there that made it easy to pay attention to. Uh-huh. But we had a guy, I was in the one seat, we had a guy in the 9 seat or 10 seat, whatever the last seat was. I can't remember how many people they sit at a table there. But that kid was the stereotypical internet 5-bet aggro guy. Mm-hmm. You know, with the hoodie, and he looks like he just turned 21 and was in every pot, raising every pot, 3-betting every pot. And then most of the rest of the group was kind of older. I don't want to say elderly, but older, right?
Okay.
And so I watched how this played. I didn't get involved in too many hands, but I watched when this guy, the little hoodie guy, was playing, and that guy never showed an ounce of worry the entire tournament. And I don't know where he went, how far he got. He was almost out at one point. He made a bad read and got called. But he showed absolutely no worry at any time when he bet or got called. All right? Mm-hmm. Now, his opponents... almost every single time that he 3-bet him or raised him or something like that, you could see some form of physical tell of despair.
Hmm.
You know, maybe a lump in the throat or a big heavy sigh or something. And now, that doesn't really mean that you're not going to win the hand, because obviously this kid... you know, made that move and some guy called him and took a big chunk of his stacks. But it really occurred to me that, Joe Navarro gets real specific in his tells. But these were some pretty much turn your hands over kind of tells, weren't they?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
Very good point. But it made me think, I mean, do I, when I get raised or something like that, do I just show them that, hey, even if you're wrong, that you're putting me to a test here, that's got to be the worst tell to give off, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's
weakness.
It's tough. It's tough because especially when you're not expecting it. You know what I mean? When you're thinking that you've got this hand played out the way it's going to play out, and you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, they come back at you. All of a sudden, that's the genuine reaction that you give. You've got to have that poker face. You got to be still and or whatever. And if you're not, then that's the most telling.
And particularly if it's on, like, the flop or the turn, which had happened a lot. Because at that point, then you've got another round of betting. And how do you undo that show of weakness on the last card?
Yeah.
You know, if I 3-bet someone and he looked exasperated but called, on the river, I am firing right back at that guy.
Is there because a little... Go ahead.
No, I mean, he's shown that his leg is broken, his wing is clipped or something like that. I'm going for the kill. You know, if he didn't show that at all and just called, then that takes that arrow out of your quiver, I think. It doesn't mean you still won't beat him or play him, but you're giving your opponent so much more ammunition, I think.
Well, that gets back to the whole Doyle Brunson play the player and not the cards thing. I think we don't play the player enough in our own little circle. And maybe it's because we always play limit games and very rarely play no limit. And we don't play tournaments as much as we used to. You'll play them once a month because you have to proof the pages and you want to go spend some time there. But I really think that when I first started playing, when we first started doing the show, I was purely no limit hold'em and purely no limit hold'em tournaments. And I read that part of Super System and embraced it and was like, I'm playing the player and I'm not playing the cards. I'm playing the situation. I'm not playing the cards. And I did that a lot. And I had a lot of success early in my career. And it wasn't just because there were a lot of schmoes who didn't know what they were doing. It was I was literally playing it that way. And then I discovered cash games. And then I discovered the home game where we played other games. Fell in love with stud, and yeah, I mean, you can get reads on people in stud, but it's one more bet most of the time. It's not spread, right? You know, and I agree with you. I think that there is a lot of information to be gleaned, and a lot of situations that you can take advantage of purely by just noticing how the player plays his game regularly and how he plays under pressure and exposing that. And it's just, you have to decide very quickly at a tournament or in your career even, what kind of player am I going to be? Am I going to be a Chris Ferguson math player, or am I going to be a Doyle Brunson field player? And I'm not trying to tick anybody off by saying math or field, but they know what I mean by that.
Right, yeah.
And I think that's, you're right. I think that it happens a lot too, like with my family when I play. I know I bring it up almost every week now, but you know, I know that my dad didn't look at his cards, or that he didn't like his cards, and so I know no matter what, he's not gonna. You know, if we're playing a triple draw game or something, if he drew three, I'm just betting, you know, because you just know that he was dissatisfied with what he had. And it's the same thing here. I think that this guy, what I was going to say before when I almost interrupted you was, did you have to worry now when you said you're going to automatically fire because he showed weakness, but you also, when he called, then you have to worry about, was he acting? You know, which I know you knew was genuine, and you felt that way, and you probably revealed it.
Yeah,
later,
but. That was it. It certainly wasn't acting on his part. And I think the bigger takeout wasn't so much paying attention to people, but paying attention to yourself.
Mm.
And, you know, I know Joe Navarro teaches this as well, too, but it really made me think, I need to pay attention to me. I mean, I'm like, that's why I started thinking, I'm like, do I do this? Do I look like... Oh man, that was worse. I can't believe you just raised. Oh, that's ridiculous. Do I ever look like that? Because if I do, I might as well just fold right then and wait till the next hand to start over, because my options are limited at that point.
Now, you remember the academy that you and I, when we were still at the Times, got to go to? And you remember it was that first when we were sitting there with Joe Hashem and the guy across from you was like, you were fondling your cards. I knew you had a big hand. And you didn't. You had crap. And so, you know what I mean? It's like, so you just never know what the tell means. It could have been Scott had an itchy fingerprint that he was scratching on the chip or on the card. You know, who knows why he was doing that, you know? And it's such a difficult game that you have to really just really work hard at your craft. And I think that's why I enjoy the home game so much. Because it is limit, and it is a chance for us to still take down pots and stuff without having to be put to a test for your entire stack and not feel like you're prepared enough because you don't play enough. And it's a tough, tough game. You got to really enjoy poker and really, really study it if you're going to be successful, especially no limit.
Well, fortunately, you don't have to pick up on these weakness tells when you're playing online. And... I'm real excited about this because for a long time, particularly our podcast listeners have been emailing me, hey, when are you going to do an Antioch Poker Cruise satellite online?
Yeah.
You know, my local room isn't offering one, or I don't even have a local room, but I want to go, and I just want to play online. And, you know, obviously Black Friday things got roiled, but we had been back and forth with a couple sites, and we couldn't work anything out. But I'm very excited to announce that FaceUp Gaming, we worked out a deal with them this week, and it's very short notice, so hopefully you guys are all listening as soon as it's been posted. But this Saturday, June 9th at 1 p.m. at faceupgaming.com, they're going to do a Battle of the Bloggers tournament, and they invited the folks from Alcanthang?
Isn't it Al Can't Hang?
Al Can't Hang?
Al Can't Hang.
Yeah, yeah. See, I don't know what that's.
I'm just guessing because I've seen his name around.
Those guys.
Yeah, I've known
those guys.
So.
Pocket Fives. Pocket Fives and Pokerati and Annie Up. So four essentially teams, but it's not really teams, but four groups of folks are going to come together on the site at 1 p.m. It's an absolute free roll. You do have to create a free membership on this. It's a subscription-based site. You create a free membership, but you don't have to give a credit card or anything like that to do the free membership. Sign up and play, and there's no earning points and come back later. The winner of this tournament gets an Antioch Poker Cruise package for August 27th. And then top 20 get other prizes, some Blue Shark optics, some FaceUp Gaming gear, stuff like that. But the other cool thing is the top finisher in each of the four or three groups that don't win. So let's say the Pocket Fives, somebody from Pocket Fives gets lucky and beats us, right? They're out. But the other three folks, the highest ranking person from each of those groups will win an Apple iPad.
Holy cow!
Not so, a bad tournament, right?
This is completely awesome.
Free. Completely free.
Totally so, awesome.
Again, that's Saturday at 1 p.m. I do believe that's Eastern. But all the directions are on our at antiupmagazine.com/news. Look for the post that says win an Antiup Poker Cruise package online on Saturday, and they'll give you the directions on how you have to sign up. You do have to enter the code ANTIUP when you do the membership and to be on part of the Team ANTIUP, and then it is a password-protected tournament as well, too, so all that information is on our website, so definitely check it out, and I'm sure you'll put it in the show notes in the
when I do the recap, I'll have a link. Yeah, so I'll do the recap on our forum and link it, and don't forget the code ANTIUP so they know where you're from. You know, it was funny, when you were gone, I was kind of upset. I was like, Scott's not going to be here for our anniversary show. I'll have to talk to Faso or Lee about it, because for some reason in my head I had it that June 5th was our anniversary for the show, and so I was gonna look at the thing, and then I was like, oh wait a minute, it's the 15th, and that falls right on our day. So I was pretty excited about it, because not only, you know, were you gonna be here for the show, but it fell right on the actual day that, you know, we say the show publishes, which is a Friday. So I started to wonder, 7 years, how many shows that is. So when you multiply 52 times, you know, 7, you get, you know, 364. And then I remember that we had that overlap week when we first moved over to the magazine and left the Times. We had, like, an extra show in there. So I thought, wow, I think we've done 365 shows. That means you literally could start on January 1st and every day listen to a different one of our shows and never repeat for an entire year. New Year's Eve, you'd be listening to another show that you hadn't listened to all year, and I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, we've probably done more shows somehow, I don't know, but to me, if you do the math, I think that's what it is. So even if I'm wrong, I don't care. It's still pretty interesting that we've done about 365 shows. You know, people are sitting there celebrating their 5-year anniversary and making a big deal about it.
We're field podcasting.
Yeah, we're field. That's right. But I think that's pretty cool. So what we really want is, we're hoping that you guys will send us either via email or please call the hotline, 813-448-1120, and just tell us, you know, what was your favorite moment of the show over those 7 years. And even if you haven't been listening that long or the last whatever, but favorite guest, you know, some moments that stand out for me were like when Barry Greenstein came on the show. And he had been up all night, and he's still playing. I think he's at the Commerce or the Bike or whatever. And
now, the first time or the second time that morning?
That's what I'm saying, is that we recorded the show for like 30 minutes with him and had all this great stuff. And I still regret it, because we had him do a bumper for the show saying ANTIUP was a great show or something. Listen, yeah. On Barry Greenstein. And then we look over at our producer, and poor Deb, she looks back at us and she's like, I forgot to hit record, guys. We need to start over. And he had told us some hilarious stuff, but man, no one ever knew that. He just went right straight back into it and was just as funny and got every detail. And, you know, it was great. But that was one of the moments where it was like the worst moment of my life. But at the same time, just how gracious and professional he was and how awesome the show ended up being anyway.
Absolutely. That was certainly one of the great ones. But, wow, it's funny to rank the 364.
Yeah.
That'd be tough to rank top 10 on that, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be tough to do it. I mean, that's probably what we should do. You and I will probably do something like that, where we each have our top 5 favorite moments, and they may overlap. But we really want to get some of the fans, because, you know, a lot of things stick out in their minds, and we may not remember those things or whatever, and they might just have a different perspective on why it was good or whatever. And so we'd really appreciate if you guys could send that in. Our show's next week, so... if you got some time to think about it after listening to this, let us know. And of course, we'll be posting this on the forum as well. We already had a couple of people respond to that, so we appreciate it. Okay, the hotline, like I said, 813-448-1120. If we use it in the hotline segment and you've never used anything before, we'll give you something cool. This comes from Nick from Charlotte, and apparently I evoke all of this, constant conversation about topics that I bring up. So let's see what he has to say.
I just wanted to comment on the podcast with Chris's math question at the beginning there. And actually, I think the argument for you, Chris, is that the statistics all work very purely and well if there's no additional information. What you were talking about is, if you had a high degree of confidence that two of the pubs were out already, then I think you can adjust the probabilities mathematically. The pure math people will tell you no because they're not working on additional information, but you actually are working on some additional information, so you should be able to adjust it. And also, remember in poker, I mean, it's not all math. You have to get a feel for the game. You have to be able to read your opponents, and that's part of it, and that's where you adjust your calculations.
It's funny that it's still lingering, the math. I'm telling you, I'm onto something. You know how they people have these brilliant, you know, moments, and you think they're crazy, but then they end up being like, you know, Einstein's theory of relativity. I mean, I'm telling you, there's something there.
Yeah, this is not one of those.
This is not one of those, I know.
Yeah, sorry. but no, you know, it is a little old now at this point, because we haven't beaten it like an Oriental rug on the forum here. But I did want to put it on there because the discussion at the forum was really good, I think, and partly because I totally misunderstood what you were trying to say anyhow and made a capital ASS out of myself. But but I think Nick kind of hit some of the same thing, too. I mean, I think the real question is just, you know, take as much information as you can and adjust accordingly. That's really what it is. It's a running math problem, the game of poker.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. And that's kind of the point I was getting at. I was just trying to find a loophole, not a loophole in the math, because that's kind of weird, but I was just trying to find a way to refine it even further, but I just didn't think of the other side of the equation. That was my mistake in the thought, but he's right, though. I mean, it's gathering information and even using that into your equation, and so I appreciate the call, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes a difference from Blackjack. I mean, Blackjack can get those little strategy cards and sit there and not have to ever think.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's
poker,
right.
You can get those kind of cards kind of for starting hands or something like that, but your thinking's just begun.
Hey, should we do a blackjack show?
A blackjack show?
Yeah, you're so good at it. You know, I mean, every time you lose all your money inevitably in one of these meetups, you go over to the blackjack tables and rally to get your money back. So I thought we'd have an episode dedicated to blackjack one week where you could just tell us all of your theories and I could sit there and be like, yeah, I don't get it. I don't understand this game. But you know,
as
you win.
As exciting as that sounds, yes. I'll have to think about that. We'll see.
But you're pretty good at it. Right? I mean, you know what you're doing. You know the basic...
Well, I mean, pretty good is exactly what I'm saying. I mean, you get a card there, as long as you can read the card, everybody's as good as I am, quote unquote.
Well, here's the reason, because...
Unless you get into whole card counting, which I never attempted.
People it's a purely like you, game. People like you, who listen to our show, probably lose their money and then want a way to get it back. And we should be able to provide them with some education on how to do that. you're the one that does it. Right, so.
So you want to take our players from a game that we are pleading to Congress over not being gambling, being a peer-to-peer game where skill wins out, and tell them that the way they make their money back after they lose it all in that game is go to a game with a built-in house edge in which they can only win in the short term if they get lucky or a variant strikes them in the right way, whichever way you prefer to say it.
And if you're card counting, you can get thrown out of the casino too. Yeah, no, a bad idea. All right, another bad. I thought, you know, the first one with the math's bad idea, so I just thought I'd stem from this and make another bad idea. But anyway, Nick gets to win something today. He gets to win a T-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the AnnieUp store at AnnieUpStore.com.
You're so great at reading those scripts.
Hey, how do you like that? Well, you know, it's funny. That's what I think we talked about. Was it Mike or Lee when I said that, too? I read just like Scott.
And remember, this is crazy. Here's my number, 813-448-1120. Call me maybe. Have you heard this annoying song?
No, I haven't.
Well, it's because I was on the road for two straight weeks, and every station, no matter the genre, played this stupid song. And it's one of those earworms.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not for you, because, you know, your ears are caked full of Rush. But for the rest of us, you know, this weird stuff gets in there, and you can't get out. And it was on, like, 100 times on this trip.
Oh, my God.
And I don't even know who sings it.
Please don't write us and tell us who it is. We don't care.
All right, mailbag this week. We love to give Joe Navarro a lot of love. At the top of the show, of course, I was giving some love. But not as much love as Scott Peters. His email was, subject line, Joe Navarro saved me $1,300.
Wow.
I don't think Joe's saved us that much, has he?
It's possible.
I'll have to go back and check the contract. but this is what Scott wrote in. He says, hey, guys, relatively new player here. So we were down to 18, 15 get paid out of 125 at the Sunday 10K guarantee at my local casino. I raised with King-King from under the gun plus one, big blind, who is a loose aggressive calls. Flop comes 6-9-6. He checks. I bet half the pot he raises, which leaves him with about 3/4 the pot left on the turn if I call. I have him covered, but not by a lot. I count on my chips, try to pick up a read, and have just about talked myself into shoving. Don't do it! When he leans back in his chair and locks his fingers behind his head, sirens blare in my brain, and I immediately fold. And much to my delight and surprise, he reaffirms my decision by showing a 6. This propels me to the final table. We end up making a multi-way chop for $1,300, my biggest tournament score to date.
Wow. Well, congratulations. But I would venture to say that he probably cost you money, Joe Navarro, because if you had shoved, the guy would have called, and a king was coming on a turn.
That's correct.
And then you would have had the most of the chips, and you would have said, no, I'm not chopping. I want to win this bad boy. And you would have taken down like $8,000 or so. So, no, I'm just kidding. That's pretty cool. And that's one of the big ones, too, leaning back in confidence, you know.
Yep.
And, yeah, it's tough. Sometimes you don't know if people are acting or not, but clearly this guy was genuine and saved you some money. And, you know, the other thing, too, is it's just kings. You know what I mean? Anything could have happened there. And clearly the guy to raise you there, you know, he's not going to have a 9 in his hand. He's probably got the 6. So nice job reading that. $1,300, that's bigger than any score I've ever had.
Yeah, yeah. And of course he said saved him, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I should say he won him, right?
Yeah.
Hmm.
He earned him.
All right. Well, not that you need anything else, Scott, because $1,300 can buy a lot of J-Design playing cards. But we're going to send you a free deck of them. Anyhow, they are the official playing cards of AnnieUp. Pick up your own decks at the AnnieUp store at AnnieUpStore.com and email us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com and you too might win something free even if you do save $1,300 from taking great advice from our awesome columns here at AnnieUp.
I have to admit, when I read this call the floor when Josh emailed it to us, I was steaming. And,
yes.
And I don't usually get very mad, and I don't really show it at the table in public. In the home game, I'll if I get mad, I'll show it, but this one had me ripping mad. So it says, I was playing 1-3 no-limit hold'em in a Midwest casino when a young woman sat down at the table. She was clearly inexperienced at the game and began bleeding money out to the other players. Soon as I was heads up with her in a pot worth a couple $100s, and I sensed she didn't like her hand and decided to make a big all-in, and I decided to make a big all-in bluff on the river with my missed draw. She thought about it a moment and was about to muck her cards when her boyfriend, who I swear materialized out of nowhere behind her and was not a player at the table, urged her to make the call. He loudly proclaimed that I was full of it, which was made even more frustrating by the fact that he was right. They began to argue playfully with the woman telling him that there was no way she would win with just a pair. At this point, the dealer did caution them that there was to be only one player to a hand. The boyfriend said, trust me, which I guess she did because she made the call. The dealer simply moved on to the next hand. I was a young player who had just been utterly humiliated, so I made a fast exit from the casino. Should I have asked to call over the floor? I sincerely felt that I had been cheated by a blatant disregard for the rules of the game, but would there even be anything the floor could do about it after chips had changed hands?
All right, Josh, here's what Jody had to say. He said, the one player to a hand rule definitely applies here. The time for you to really speak up was while all the banter was occurring. I realize you probably wanted to not speak out of fear of showing weakness, but you could have made it about the boyfriend breaking the rules. You should have insisted the deal would call the floor as soon as the guy started talking to her and insisted on him being quiet. As it happened, I think speaking to a supervisor about the situation before you left could have helped prevent this type of behavior from becoming a habit in the room where you want to play. I don't think you were cheated as much as you were just a victim of a lighthearted disregard or ignorance of the rules. On a lighter note, the pros always tell us not to bluff at rookies. Never know what may happen.
Yeah, rookies, yeah. Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is there really isn't anything they could have done because, I mean, they could have thrown the guy out or something, but they can't say, oh, we'll refund your money because they didn't do anything wrong either. The casino didn't do anything wrong. You know, the guy caught him in, after he started talking and said, hey, one player to a hand. I mean, he can't stop the guy from doing what he did right away. You know what I mean? But there is something to be said about whether or not people should allow to be sweat. You know what I mean? Like, not that that would happen, but in this case, let's say the guy was sweating her the whole time and then just blurts that out because he knew her cards and he read the guy the whole time for a big, big pot. They make their score and then he leaves. So there's something to be said about that, too. There shouldn't be really be – I don't really think there should be sweating in a casino anyway. But, that's it made me so mad when I read it. That guy said that. And I started thinking to myself, what could you do at that moment to combat it since it's already been said? Do you sort of play along and say, hey, buddy, I hope you stay there with her because you couldn't be more wrong. But then all of a sudden now you're talking and it sounds like you're trying to prove him wrong. What do you do? You know?
Yeah. You know, when Josh said this in, I wrote back, I think my actual quote was, this was wrong on so many levels.
Yeah, it was.
Because it really was. I mean, you have this guy that shows up and that starts talking, which he shouldn't do. Then you have a dealer who I think is checked out for the night here. Right? I mean, as soon as someone says something, a good dealer says something to that person. They don't wait for it to turn into a conversation like it sounds like happened here.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there didn't seem to be any kind of forcefulness from the dealer on enforcing this. Obviously, our hero got called, and then I feel bad that he felt humiliated and left from the casino. That shouldn't happen.
No.
No one should ever feel humiliated at the casino and leave. And particularly on this, I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. He just made a bluff. And then he would have won it if this guy didn't show up and, break the rules. So it was wrong on so many levels, I think. And I feel bad for Josh. I hope he goes back to the casino and plays again and doesn't let this mar his experience. But, I think the biggest wrong thing here is what Jody mentioned, you mentioned. There's no good way of really addressing this in the middle of the hand.
Yeah.
You know, because then am I going to start playing games? Am I going to say, you know, hey, you should call or not and hope that they figure out that I'm not, you know, it just doesn't work. So, you know, the best thing you could do, as Jody said, is, you know, hey, dealer, is this loud in this room? Or something like that. I mean, it makes you sound like a jerk, but, you know, when somebody else is being a bigger jerk, they kind of force you to be a jerk.
Yeah, I mean, you're just defending yourself now at that point. I don't think you're, you know, and the other thing, too, is I think what I ultimately would have done was been like, please, please listen to your boyfriend. Please. Clearly you two get along so swimmingly that I don't want there to be an argument. So please, please call for me, you know, and then she won't call. And so, but the other thing too, I wondered is that what would Josh have done if she did fold? Would he have shown the bluff and then watched the boyfriend beat the girlfriend in the parking lot? I mean, really, what do you do at that point? Do you not show your bluff?
Well, you know, another thing too. This is why it's tough to get people to play poker too. I think is kind of this. You know, I'm sure when they play at home, this boyfriend and girlfriend, and you know, they do this all the time. Probably they're looking at each other's cars and talking about it, having fun, drinking beer, and then when they get a casino, they have no idea that that's not acceptable.
Right.
And so here's a situation where Josh felt humiliated and left, may not come back. But had the dealer properly handled the situation, that woman might not ever come back. So, I mean, there's no winners in this.
No, it's just terrible, unfortunate.
All right, Josh, we appreciate you sending the call to the floor, and we are going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. Great thing about this, no one talks during this. But you don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store and send us our call to floors to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. Jody really appreciates, he really likes answering these, and we love having this segment on the show. It's become real popular.
Yeah, and it keeps them sharp, too. You know, it makes you think about it and review stuff. And I do think it's been popular. And the magazine as well. We're getting people to write in from the magazine's things, not just from the show. So it's starting to take off. Really happy about it.
And then to create some feedback.
Yep.
Our good friend Nick, who's on the member of the TDA, and he hangs on every word that Jody says. And I love that because, you know, because this is the thing, and I talked to Nick about this slide, is you can create a rule, but there's so much room for interpretation in these rules.
Yep.
That's what makes it exciting is that someone, you know, Jody could say one thing and Nick might have a different opinion, Matt Savage might have another opinion, whoever else. And that's why we have these conversations, so we can all talk about them and figure out what we think. And he wrote in from the Faso show and wanted to say that he thought it was a very interesting show once again. He did miss not having Scott on the show.
You had to squeeze that in there, didn't you, buddy?
I can't blame him, you know.
He's the exception that proves the rule, so...
But then he did some kind of kiss-up here thing about, I have to tell you that Mike Faso did a nice job filling it.
And he did. He did.
But he says the situation that you guys had talked about, the lady made a raise and everyone thought it was $1,200, and she later clarified it as $12,000, which, by the way, was an amazing story. And I was going to answer. I was like screaming at the podcast too when you guys were talking about this. But he says it's actually covered the 2-day rules. And here's what he said is number 44, non-standard and unclear betting. Players use unofficial betting terms and gestures at their own risk. These may be interpreted to mean other than what the player intended. Also, whenever the size of a declared bet has multiple meanings, it will be ruled as the lesser value. Example, I bet 5. If it is unclear whether 5 means 500 or 5,000, the bet stands at 500.
We had a little discussion about this on the forum, too, antiupmagazine.com/forum. And what I had said on there, and I'll say it here now, is, I knew about this rule because I remember them talking about this once before on something else. I don't know what it was, but I'm sure that it is the rule. I mean, that's the way it goes. But it was the bang bang of the thing right. That, you know, what if this woman had a speech impediment and she didn't get it out in time, or whatever? It happened that fast, God. It was unbelievably hilarious. She was like, and she had it in her hand, and she's looking at the chips, and she's like, 12, and then it's like fold call. Or fold, fold, and then almost a call. And she's like, and she puts 1,000 on. She says 1,000. And they're like, oh. So the guy's already folded anyway, but the other guy almost called. It happened so fast that it was literally almost like the, who calls it? One of the dealers that we have on our cruise, they call it the sprinkler head thing, where you start one thing and everybody reacts to it. And then that's how fast it happened. And I was perplexed. I think they even brought it up that the lower amount would have been, the dealer may have said something like that, where the lower amount would have been the declared amount, but the speed of which these guys folded, and she was literally still making her bet. That it would have sucked that had to make a 1,200 when she didn't mean that. But
and you're absolutely right that the speed is what is the big moment here. But at the bottom line, that we had two players that didn't take response for their own play, which is a common theme that I know. Just like sits in the crawl of folk listeners of the show, every time Jody says, hey, it's the player's responsibility to know what's going on.
Right.
And in this case, the woman didn't know, didn't clarify exactly what she meant, so she would have, had to do the 1,200 right when she meant the 12,000, which still would have been a great bet, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And then the other guy, no matter how fast everybody else folds, you still have to wait and make sure that it's clear.
Yeah.
And, I do feel bad for him in this situation because I don't think anybody in the world would have thought that she meant 12,000 except for her. But still, that's a reminder. You can't just assume,
The other thing, too, is that he was hoping it was 1,200 because he didn't call. He actually was about to, and then he didn't. He wanted to call, and it would have been funny, not funny, but to see how that hand would have played out had she had to make it 12, and then he called 12 and then cracked whatever it was she had in her hand that she had to bet 12,000 with. We can only assume it was like 8 or something. I mean, it was just unreal to bet. I couldn't believe how much it was, like 100 times a big blind or something. I mean, it was crazy. So,
well, and the other thing, too, I don't want to drag this on too long, but I was thinking about this, is in that event, because I did the Division of Poker radio show a couple weeks before, and Dan, one of the hosts, was a player, right? And he asked me, hey, what kind of play should I expect at this thing? And I told him, it's fairly standard for a charity event, but it's actually magnified by the scope of this event. And you have to know when you go into a charity event that you're not going to get the same, I don't want to say the same quality of players, but you're going to get a group of players that you're not going to see in a normal tournament, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know whether this woman was part of that group or not, but certainly in the past couple of years when I played there, there are people there that they don't understand poker.
Right. They're there to support their charity or their congregation or whatever. That's what they're there for. They're just there to once a year give back to their own thing, and this is a fun way to do it. And they didn't. And this woman was one of those types of players where someone told her, "Hey, you know what? When you have a hand that you want to protect, bet a lot." And then they said, "When you're in a hand with someone who raises, bet out, because then they don't know what's going on and they fold to you." And that's what she did. And it took me a few times to realize that was her tell, but that's exactly who this woman was. She was someone who was just there to support the charity, and that's the right.
As a skilled player, you got to know when you go into that event, you need to slow down your action and just think about that. And remember that you can't just assume. the 1,200 versus 12,000, you're going to have to expect that there's going to be some head-scratching moments, and probably a lot early on.
Yes.
And just adjust your play and slow down a little bit. And that's tough to do for players that, you know, play a lot of tournaments and you know, are in a rhythm. But, you know, it helps, you know.
All right, well, we're going to have some more meetups on the horizon here. Coming up very quickly, Scott and I are headed to Las Vegas for the week of June 25th to the 29th. And on June 27th, we'll be hitting the MGM 612 mixed game. We're hoping that Korean Jet might be there around 6 p.m. Again, if people don't want to play that stakes, or if we can't get a game that suits your needs, we'll probably get another table going or something else that the majority wants to play. But that's June 27th, 6 p.m. at the MGM Grand.
And looks like we'll get a small group together in New Mexico on June 30th at one of the Albuquerque casinos. I'll pin down those details in the following week, as I will with our Isle Blackhawk in Colorado meetup, which I believe will be Sunday, July 1st. And we'll be doing impromptu cash games there, just hanging out, playing some cards, having some beers. So just email us to let us know if you're interested in that, or post on our forum at andyupmagazine.com/forum.
Also, we have our cruises coming up. If you don't happen to win one in the free roll this Saturday, you know, you can still find out all the details at andyupmagazine.com/cruise. Our August 27th one is out of Port Canaveral. Planned giveaways at Suncoast in Las Vegas, Palm Beach Kennel Club in Florida, also the Seminole Hard Rock in Hollywood, Tampa Bay Downs, Ebro Greyhound Park up in the Panhandle, and Blue Shark Optics is also doing something where you have to submit a video, so that's kind of exciting. And of course, we have our November 10th one out of Baltimore. We're already getting quite a few people booked for that already, and there's some giveaways at Dover Downs coming up. Check our site for that as well.
Yeah, and we just crossed the 200 passenger mark this week for the Port Canaveral. That one's going to be huge.
Huge.
So. Huge.
Okay. So,
in all seriousness, if you want to get on that cruise, you need to call soon, because
that's true.
This is my third reorder of cabins, and I don't know how many more the cruise line's going to give me. So
that's true.
Don't wait till the last minute. Good seats not still available.
Let's see what's happening on the Antiup News Desk.
It's early in the World Series of Poker season, and already some great storylines are emerging. Event 6, the controversial maiden voyage. Really, maiden voyage? You can tell it that Chris wrote.
It was the first trip, the
it's
first
tournament
time.
Tournaments don't set sail. What's controversial about it is you're calling it a maiden voyage. All right, Event 6, the controversial maiden voyage of the 5K Mixmax event. Had a record-setting 9-hour, 25-minute heads-up semifinal match between Aubin Cazales and Warwick Merzkanian. Cazales won that match in the bracelet. Also, Andy Block is finally off the schneid. Yeah, you can tell, Chris. I never say schneid either. I don't even know what it means.
I write with color. You write black and white.
Yeah, okay. Andy Block is finally off whatever this is, taking the bracelet in the 1,500-hour stud event. And our Vera made a deep run in the 1500 No Limit Hold'em event, but fell short of the final table. But he cashed 24th, $23,000 going back to him, far more than I've ever won.
That was Lee Childs, by the way. You kind of dropped out there, our internet connection.
Sorry. Our own Lee Childs.
Our own Lee Childs was running good, but then fell short.
Third best guest host.
The Women in Poker Hall of Fame has announced the nominees for this year's class. Voting will be done through June 20th by a panel of hall members. We're actually board members and media, right? We're part of the media now that gets to vote for this. Nominated are players Victoria Corrin, Nani Dollison, Annie Duke, Karina Jett, J.J. Liu, and Isabel Mercier. And then industry professionals Debbie Burkhead, Deborah Jardina, Bonnie Linos, and Kathy Raymond. We know a lot of those people, actually.
Yeah. They changed up the voting this year and invited some media representatives, so we were very thankful to be part of that panel. And we got about a couple weeks here before we have to send our ballot off. So in all honesty, I want some feedback here from the nation on who they think are worthy of being inducted this year. It's kind of interesting. We get 10 votes, and we can put them all in one or split them up for one for everyone, you know, in case everybody wants a participation ribbon, or however you want to do it. So I'll be interested in some feedback from our listeners on who they think is worthy of this. And finally, a Florida man who says he lost more than $100,000 playing poker is in jail After failing spectacularly in what authorities say was a plot to kidnap a man, the suspect says profited in part from his losses.
Oh, my God.
Michael Melio's plan was ultimately upended. I love this. When his wife contacted the FBI after she learned he was cheating on her with one of her friends.
Oh, jeez.
You know, I never watched it, but I'm sure my favorite show would be World's Dumbest Criminals. Because it's amazing to me how stupid people are that do crime. You know, it's all right. You can be stupid in poker. You can be stupid in magazine publishing. You can be stupid in anything you want. But when you're stupid and you're trying to commit a crime, you know, somebody needs to take you aside and go, hey, dude, I love you, but you're stupid. So don't break any laws because you're going to get caught. And not only are you going to get caught, but a couple knuckleheads in a poker cast are going to be laughing about you getting caught. Oh, so obviously this guy sucks at poker, right?
Don't cheat on your wife either.
Yeah, he lost $100,000, right? So he's got one strike against him. And then, all right, how many times, somebody probably has a stat on this, Chris, but, you know, I watch a lot of Lifetime Movie Network TV movies. How many times when you try to plot to kill someone is the person that you hire really an FBI informant? I'm pretty sure it's pretty close to 99.9%.
Did you just admit that you watch Lifetime?
Of course. You know, because of this, it's Trainwreck TV. You're like, no, don't hire him. He's an FBI informant. You should know that. So not only did this guy lose all his money playing poker, terrible at it, then he thought he could, apparently go to Craigslist and hire some guy to kill someone and not be an FBI informant. And then, on top of this, he's of the quality male species that thinks it's fun to cheat on your wife. And apparently did pretty badly that she found out. And then thought, you know what? Oh, you know what? How do I get back at my husband for cheating on me with my friend, by the way? Not just some, chicky do at the bar or something, but a friend.
Yeah.
All right, well, you know, I could either cheat on him myself, or wait a minute, he's been telling me about wanting to kill this guy. Maybe I just get him in trouble for that.
How do you have $100,000 to lose and be that dumb anyway? I don't know how that money must have come to him, like, from a slip and fall or something. I mean, how does this guy even amount to $100,000 that he can afford to lose playing poker? If he's this dumb. Unbelievable.
Now, of course, this is all charges right now. He hasn't actually been convicted, but I'm having a hard time believing that this guy's going to find a way to talk himself out of this. He's going to be like, I goes, you're out of order. This whole court's out of order.
Okay, well, it's been...
That means he would have to watch a movie, and if he watched a movie, he would know he was hiring an FBI informant.
It's been marinating for 2 weeks, Scott. The O'Malley's move has been marinating for 2 weeks.
Yeah, you know, every time you said marinating on the show the last couple weeks, I wanted a barbecue.
Well, go ahead.
Nowhere near it, so can we get away from the food references? Because it makes me hungry.
Okay, all right. Well,
I'm sitting on the shelf for 2 weeks.
All right, well, okay.
Growing...
Don't say mold, because that's kind of food-related. So.
That's true.
But yeah, we finally get to wrap up on O'Malley's move. Let's hear part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are sitting at a 2-5 no-limit hold'em cash game. There are 9 people at the table, and since it's a bit higher stakes, you get a few more solid players in the game. We sit with 850 and have been playing for about an hour. The under-the-gun min raises to 10. He's at that awkward poker age, where he's past the level of any two cards, but not quite to a solid level yet. He understands the game, but it's just a fledgling understanding, and he's prone to make mistakes. We've gleaned this information while talking with him in the lounge, waiting to be called to the table. He sits with $600. The plus one and plus two call, MP1 folds, but the MPs 2 and 3 call, and we're in the cutoff with the Jack of Diamonds, 9 of Diamonds. Not the greatest starting hand in the world, but there's already $57 in the pot, so we're getting 5.7 to 1 on our money. We toss in the $10 to see if we can hit a flop. The button folds, as does the small blind, and the big blind calls. The pot is $70, and we see a flop of Queen of Diamonds, Nine of Clubs, Two of Spades. Okay, we've seen better flops than this before. The big blind checks, and the initial raiser makes it $25 to go. The plus one and plus two fold, MP2 calls, and the MP3 folds. It's $25 to win $120. That's not bad. We haven't got much here, so we're going to float. We make the call, giving us 815 behind. The big blind folds. The turn is the 10 of diamonds. We have a pair and an open-ended straight flush draw. The under the gun leads out for 100 into the $145 pot. The MP folds, and it's to us. What are we going to do?
All right, number one, I'm going to buy a horse, and I'm going to instruct its trainer to teach it to kick me in the back of the head for playing Jack 9 in a multi-way pot. That's isn't my first solution to this.
Isn't that when you play Jack 9 and it's multi-way?
Well, yeah, but let me finish here.
Okay.
there's plenty of room for criticizing me later on.
Okay.
Not because it's a bad decision, see? And you even saw the notes there.
I know. I just like interrupting you because you've been interrupting me all day. It's like, it's good to be home.
All right, so, you know, I want this horse to kick me in the back, not because it's a bad decision, but that it can lead to more brutal decisions later on. For me, I would have folded here on the flop. But now the hand gets much more interesting on the turn. Is it possible to go away? And a real player, quote-unquote real player, I think, would raise here. I'm a chicken player. I would suggest a raise to 300, but I know I'm only capable of calling and chucking. Chuckling?
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 I don't know.
What does the chicken do? Cackling?
I think I'm calling.
Chicken does something that's C, right?
You know, when you think about this, you still only have third pair, but you have a nice draw. But that draw is for only one street. A raise is tough to do. I mean, you could do it, but if you miss, you're going to have to fire again. And if this guy has a really strong hand, you know, you're just wasting money. So I think I'm just calling. I don't want to open up the betting again. And if he shoves, because that's the other thing, too, is if I open up the raise and he shoves, then what do I do? And then I got third pair and a redraw that, you know, I can't afford to call on a shove. So I like just calling here, I guess. Maybe I'm chicken like you, I don't know, but I'm calling.
Hello again. So what's the right move here? With a player like this, we can assume he watches a lot of poker on TV. Seeing the pros get pretty tricky preflop with big pocket pairs or ace-king or ace-queen. That's what we're going to put him on. His mistake was the tiny bet on the turn. We know we're behind now, but we also know he's probably not past the level 1 thinking, and is really in over his head in this higher stakes game. A raise here might induce a shove, so we don't want that. If we call here and hit our hand, it doesn't matter what he has, we're probably going to get paid off. We have to call 100 to win 245, and we are roughly a 45% favorite to win the pot, assuming he has what we think he does. That means we're getting 2.5 to 1 on our money, and we're going to make our hand 45% of the time. Calculate the implied odds, and we're in line for a call. We put in the $100, and the river is the 5 of diamonds. What a beauty. With 345 in the pot, our opponent leads out for 200. Well, hopefully it's not the ace-king of diamonds, and we highly doubt it is. We come over the top for the rest of his stack, and he snap calls, rolling over aces. We table our rivered flush and try to tread lightly with what we say. We want him in this game, and we want him to be friendly. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, don't get married to those aces. I hope to see you on the felt.
You know, I guess at least my chicken little act would have won me this pot, but maybe calling was the right thing. I think most players would say, you know, hey, I have all these outs. You know, it gives me two ways to win a pot. If I can win it right now, I don't have to catch. But, you know, I apparently misread the read on this player here and didn't think he was the type that was just going to wall in with aces.
It's a quick note. He said that the opponent made a tiny bet on the turn, but he meant the flop. He wrote us in and said, hey, should I retape it? I'm like, no, just You meant to say the flop. So, but it turns out, you know, a call would have worked out, right? So.
Oh, yeah. You know, but that's result-oriented.
Yeah, I know. I'm still not sure if that's the right play, given the circumstances, but I think I would have called one, so.
Well, in this particular hand, it was, because you're right. I mean, had we made that raise there, we would have got it. We would have been put to a test for all of our chips.
Right.
On the turn. And I don't think we could have folded, so it all would have worked out properly anyhow, but it would have been a heart attack-inducing slow turn of that river card to find out.
Indeed.
All right, well, it's time for our annual fan survey. Visit annieupmagazine.com/survey and have your voice heard and be entered for thousands of dollars of great prizes. Very excited this year. Our grand prize is lunch in a one-hour lesson from world champion Chris Moneymaker.
Awesome.
We've been doing this for a couple of years, and we've never had the roster of prizes that we had this year, even if you take out the whole Moneymaker thing, which I think is pretty cool. And we'll talk about the prizes later on. But I'm very excited this year because we have fun with the survey. You know, we spend a lot of time bantering back and forth between each other, talking to our ambassadors, and trying to come up with the right mix of questions. We don't want these things you have to take the day off work to fill this thing out, right?
Right, right.
So we want it to be fairly quick, but at the same time, we want to cover a lot of ground because we only do it once a year.
That's right.
And, you know, if you put a bunch of boring stuff in there, then people are like, quit halfway through. So you got to do some fun stuff in there, too. And that's what's fun, at least on the show, to talk about. I mean, no one really cares about what's the emerging poker destination on the show here. But they probably do. We'll have a lot of fun talking about what professional player we'd like most to see run for public office, something like that, right?
Yeah.
So,
I was going to say that we've actually now named them the Anties. So these awards are the Anties. You'll win an ante if you win an award. So pretty exciting stuff. But I like the fact that we are starting to grow with the times too. We're not just asking regular standard questions. We're asking stuff about like Twitter and blogging and things like that as well, because we know a lot of people follow them, and I know that being on Twitter now, I pretty much have gotten a good taste of all the professionals out there and interesting people who tweet, and it's kind of cool. So I'm interested to see what the Anti-Up Nation and our readers and everything else think and what they feel about who the best tweeter is and stuff like that. So we should get right into it.
Yeah, we're not going to go through every question here, but we'll hit the highlights of it and kind of organized it with the fun stuff here first. We'll talk about the fun questions. And I always like putting this one, and maybe it's a little personal thing, but I get annoyed often, as you can probably imagine, at the table.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say anything because I'm also quiet, but I always like to know what the most annoying trait is in opponents. I always think it's smelly. But this year, I added a couple different ones, including texting and tweeting. It's funny that you said, you know, hey, you've been following the Twitter feeds, and that seems to be exploding now, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's just tweeting and texting at the table, and I think it probably annoys a few people. We'll find out how many, but I added that in there as one of the options.
Well, speaking of tweeting, then, I basically picked five that I follow and thought their stuff was always the most interesting and got the most reaction from people when I was reading them and stuff. Who is the best poker tweeter? We put Jason Mercier, Doyle Brunson, although Todd is good too. But we put Doyle Brunson, Danny Negreanu, because his stuff is always almost controversial or hilarious. Matt Savage, because everyone goes to him for advice. And then Kevin Mathers, who seems to be like the media mogul these days, even though he works for our competition now. He definitely, they all go to him. They all want to know answers, and he has them. So those are the guys that we've listed for our best tweeter this year.
Yeah. And of course, you know, I love the home game too, and I think if anybody has a home game, you sit around thinking, hey, it'd be nice to have a professional sit in here and have fun. So one of our questions we do is which of these professional players would you most like to invite to your home game? And we put in Antonio Esfandiari, Phil Locke, Jennifer Harmon, Phil Helmuth, and Mike Matisseau. One of those, I think, would make it more interesting, wouldn't it?
I have to admit, though, after we did this, I thought to myself, you know, on the Academy Awards, when they have two women up for Best Supporting Actress from the same movie, and mm-hmm. they always say they cancel each other out.
Yeah.
I wonder if Esfandiari and Locke are going to cancel each other out, and then, like, Helmuth or Harmon or Matisseau are going to win by default because of that. I wonder. When I think about that list of the five, I think Locke would be the guy I'd want most at my home game because he's just hilarious. You know, if you don't get Helmuth ticked off or Matisseau ticked off, I don't know how hilarious they'll be. But Locke, I think, is always funny no matter what with his antics and stuff. So I don't know. I think I might have Locke in my home game. Our next one is, which professional poker player would you like to see run for public office? That's an interesting question. And it really, when you think about it, most of these people that are on the list that we've put, they really do, you know, seem to be not opinionated, but educated.
Well, I think it's safe to say opinionated.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Not in a negative manner, necessarily.
Right, exactly.
But they're well educated.
They're educated, and they speak up. You know, a lot of people who are educated, you know, don't like the attention or whatever and just keep it themselves. But it seems like these guys really, really do speak out about injustices or whatever. So Greg Raymer, Annie Duke, Mike Sexton, Alan Kessler, and Barry Greenstein. Kessler was a late ad because he's the one that's always calling out poker rooms and casinos or whatever for their structures and for how to solve the problems or their scheduling and stuff. So he really speaks out a lot too. And then of course the other ones we all pretty much know why. I mean, Raymer's with the PPA and Annie Duke's doing all of her boycotting and charity work and stuff. And Sexton, of course, is the ambassador. And even Greenstein always speaks up and stuff. So pretty good, interesting category.
Well, the next one I think is kind of fun too. You know, because, you know, a lot of these, I call them little fly-by-night poker websites. You know, they put up these scandalous lists and get a bunch of hits, and then people are like, that's disgusting. So, you know, we don't want to do who's the hottest kind of player, because that's beneath us, right?
Yeah.
So we have to be smarter here at NEUP. And so here's the way we kind of got to that is by saying, which poker player would you like to take as your date to your high school reunion? Thought about prom, but I'm like, that's kind of weird. Then, you know, people would be underage. And stuff.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
high school reunion. And, you know, the high school reunion actually opens it up to something more, too. It doesn't necessarily have to do with, you know, the opposite sex or anything like that. It could just be somebody you like to show off, right?
Right.
You know, hey, look at my bud, Phil Ivey. So what we do is we put five women and five men, so it's a good mix there. But we put Vanessa Russo, Karina Jett, Liv Borey, Kara Scott, and Tiffany Michelle as the women. And then Chad Brown, David Williams, Gus Hansen, Phil Ivey, and Patrick Antonius as the men. And this was a pretty hard list to put together, I think.
Yeah, let's move on. No, but when I posted this on Twitter, because I got all this stuff scheduled to release, like one a day, a lot of people were like, I'm taking all of them. Can I take them all? Can I show up with all five of those women on my arm? That'd be awesome. You know, so they're all having fun with it. So that was kind of cool. But
the helicopter land on the
exactly.
John Kennedy High School lawn, helicopter pad, and the fall out of the yeah, absolutely. That's going to happen.
So have a lot of fun with that one.
Notes too. All right, this one I was having a little fun with too, because you know we kind of wanted to get we don't want to be biting with these necessarily. We want to have fun. So I mean, we're not trying to be mean at all. But let's be honest, there's some folks out there that are just mean, right?
Yeah.
And they come in the form of United States states. United States states, is that correct? Just states, right? So we asked, what is the most hostile state towards poker? And the infamous nominees are Utah, which, of course, banned all kinds of online poker, even if it comes back. And then went beyond that and was trying to enforce its will in the rest of the country. Alabama was pretty much just blew gambling out of the entire state.
Right.
Outside of the Indy casinos. And even then, they were all in their face. Maryland, you know, I know Michael Younger, our Maryland ambassador, probably loves this one because the state authorities there actually helped with the Black Monday investigation.
Yeah.
Not the Black Friday, but the Black Monday, and profited from it. And then Kentucky, which, you know, made this kind of crazy bid to seize the domains of online name rooms. I don't think they really succeeded. And then, of course, the federal government came in and was like, thanks, kid. Yeah, we'll take care of it from here. It did it. But those are the four we put there, Utah, Alabama, Maryland, and Kentucky. I think that's going to be a good race to the wire there.
And so wrapping up some of the other fun ones real quick, we have who's your favorite fictional poker player? And we listed a pretty decent list there. The best poker blog and the best poker audio network. And then what organization has done the most to promote women in poker?
Yep.
So there's some fine organizations within all of those categories. So make sure you pick your favorite and be heard. So.
And then, of course, we'll move on to the meaningful stuff now. Not the other stuff isn't meaningful, but, you know,
Right.
This is more meaningful. But what we mean by meaningful is we do share the results of these questions with poker room managers across the country. And in the past, several have told us that they have used the results to make changes in their rooms. So, you know, a lot of people say, you know, I wish my room did this. And maybe you talk individually to the manager and it doesn't have quite the weight. But now, you know, an entire survey of people nationwide, and we can share it to the poker room managers. The deck does carry a lot of weight, and we have seen some changes because of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is an opportunity, a real opportunity for you to affect some changes here. And my favorite, obviously, is our most of these are multiple choice, but we do have a couple open-ended questions, and this is one. If you could take over your favorite poker room for one day, what would you change? And I look forward to these answers every year because some people take this very seriously and like, oh, I would change the structure of the Tuesday tournament. And other people are like, I would rob the cage.
Oh, my God. This next one I think is going to be a slam dunk, to be honest. When online poker is regulated, what type of regulation do you prefer, intrastate or interstate?
And I think you're right, I think, yeah.
But you never know. You never know.
But it's kind of one of those loaded questions. I try not to do too many of those, but you see those in surveys at times, you know, where
sure.
They kind of write the question, they're kind of knowing what the answer is going to be, and then they can use it to say, hey, see, everybody wants interstate. But, you know, there's a case to be made for intrastate out there, too, so we might be surprised. I don't think we will be, but we might be. I actually had a long conversation with one of our Antioch poker crews passengers about this next question this morning. He said we asked what kind of tournament do you prefer most, and what it is it's an idea is rebuy, reentry events, or neither. We're seeing it seems like reentry tournaments have just sprouted everywhere in the past year or so. Before there were some rebuys, but not a lot. But now reentry seems to be the hot thing. And I'm just kind of curious whether people prefer one or the other, or they just prefer that no one gets back in.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I actually have been struggling with that re-entry from it was weird when we talked about re-entry tournaments before, and we're like, oh, yeah, it's a cool way to get back into the tournament and everything. But then I start thinking about the history tied to the World Series and how there's a re-entry event now, and I just think it's a bracelet. You know, I start to wonder about the... Not the ethics of it, I guess, but really just the, you know, it's historical, and you want to know that the person who won it, they won it. You know, they didn't get a mulligan. You know, it's just weird. So, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about them. I don't think I like reentry events anymore, though.
All right. Well, you should take the survey and let us know that.
I think I'm going to. Since Black Friday, where do you play online now? Do you play online now?
We're trying to figure out what the market is for these subscription-based sites like, Face Up Gaming, which is doing our online satellite for our cruise this week, or some of free play sites like Zynga that we talked about, whether people are still playing on one of the online for money sites that are still operating, at least for now.
Right.
Or whether people just give up on it and playing live until something better comes back. So we'll be interested to see what the breakdown is on
that.
And then a couple other things we won't go into great detail on, but we were asking what's the biggest factor in deciding which poker room to play in. I think that's a big one for our managers. They always like to see the answers to that one. What do you want most from the jackpot rake? Always controversial. You know, do you want them to take that dollar at all?
Or yeah.
If they do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And what do you look for most in a tournament? You know, structure or payouts, things like that. That's also very helpful.
Well, we have other stuff too on there, like destinations and how to improve even Ante Up, right? We're going to try to see if anybody thinks that we're doing things okay or if we should do things differently.
Well, yeah, and those suggestions have been really helpful in the past and helped us. We have some that are multiple choice, but some open ended stuff. So, you know, it's an opportunity to, you know, for whatever reason, if you haven't called us or emailed us to tell us about something, you know, you can take a few minutes during the survey and let us know what we can be doing.
And, of course, you mentioned the prizes. Very exciting stuff. We have some great prizes. Of course, you mentioned the lunch with Chris Moneymaker and the one-hour lesson. And it involves the Division of Poker and their series up in Pennsylvania, Ohio area. But if you can't get there for that, he'll still call you and give you a phone lesson So that's pretty cool too. Just, hey, you know, I'm gonna call Chris Moneymaker today and talk to him for about an hour. You know, I mean, that alone is awesome. Even if you can't make the in person thing.
Yeah, and I'm hoping the winner can actually make the in person thing, so they can let us know what Chris ordered for lunch.
Yeah, he had a turkey club, hold the bacon.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking Chris is kind of like a burger kind of guy, isn't he? Just from talking to him, he's probably not going to be the alfalfa wrap kind of guy necessarily. Of course, I don't know where lunch is. Maybe you can get a whole steak or something. But
it's true.
But yeah, I'd be interested in that. But and then we got a couple autographed and unique items. You know, the new movie All In that we've been talking about that Chris is featured in prominently. We got a poster signed by him as one of the prizes.
Yep.
And also a deck of cards. From that movie. And then our great columnist, Jonathan Little, he's got a new book out, and he's going to autograph that. In fact, actually, I already have it here at NEF headquarters. So
awesome.
Yep, it's pretty nice. You know, he didn't really inscribe it to anybody personally, though.
Yeah, he's not clairvoyant.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he could have done, like, you know, 100 different names. Just to cover the bases. And then a really cool merchandise bag from the good folks down at Palm Beach Kennel Club. It's got some World Series hats and stuff in there, and cards and keychains, all kinds of interesting stuff. And then very unique U.S. flags from WildTallahasseePoker.com. So,
wow!
Show your pride in America. Even you know, it's gonna be kind of awkward if some of our Australian friends win this, but I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they want to.
Of course, you know, as always, we're gonna have some poker products. Blue Shark Optics, great Poker Hands cards, Poker Bling bracelets, Poker Depot Whiz Wheels, Poker Faces card protectors, and Pro Poker Gear bracelets. So, you know, that stuff, some of that stuff's appeared on the show before, and it's always been very popular.
I got some clothing on the list, too. We got some Annie Up shirts and stuff we're going to give out, Bust Out Poker gift certificate, some Grinder Gear shirts, a High Roller clothing t-shirt, PMS Pokerwear t-shirts, and I think it's a hat and t-shirt combo from 3-Bet Poker. So lots of stuff so you don't have to go to Kohl's for back-to-school shopping this year.
And then we're going to give away some books, too. We got the Winning Poker Tournaments One Hand at a Time, and the Winning Women of Poker, the book that I helped edit and write. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that all these poker books have winning in the title.
Yeah.
None of them have Losing with Grace, or How to Lose Less at Poker.
Which I clearly haven't read, the Losing with Grace, if you ask Mike Faso. So.
All right, well, remind everybody the survey is open through August 1st, and you can take it at andyupmagazine.com/survey. So take it, share some thoughts, win some great stuff.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
See, I've been gone for 2 weeks, Chris, and I got to come back with a bang. So I picked an Omaha 8 hand for Hand of the Week this week.
Yeah, and I'm going to read it, right? You're going to do it, and I'm going to read it.
Yeah, yeah.
Figures. Figures. I knew you wanted to zing me somehow this week. I wasn't sure how you were going to do it, but now it's reared its ugly head.
All right, it comes from Jeff P. from Fox River Grove, Illinois.
Wow, that's a cool name for a town.
It's an awesome name, isn't it?
Yeah.
I have no idea where it is. I'm assuming it's near Chicago. But
everything's near Chicago.
He was apologizing for not being at the Chicago meetup, so I'm going to... But maybe it was 3 hours away, and he was going to drive all the way up there.
That's true.
So it's he's playing quarter 50-cent limit Omaha 8s on the Merge Network. Shh, don't tell the Department of Justice, he said. You know, I gotta say, you know, hey, if they're going after Merge, they probably would have got him by now, right? So you're probably all right.
Yeah.
But he's playing quarter 50-cent limit. He says the table seems pretty loose and aggressive to this point. He's played about 20 hands and is in middle position, actually the hijack speed. Under the gun, who hasn't played a complete orbit, but noticeably raised an aceless low hand with 3 diamonds in his first hand, open raises.
Jeez.
That's the kind of guy I want on my Omaha table. Although I wish it was pot limit at this point.
Yeah.
All right, and apparently it folds to us. And we have the ace of spades, the queen of clubs, the ten of hearts, and a tray of hearts. Fold, call, or raise, Chris?
I like to raise when I'm playing Omaha 8 and I'm first into the pot. If someone else already raised, I'd probably just call. I think I'd raise here.
Yeah, this is a tricky hand. You can make defense for either way here. One of the things about Omaha 8 is you want to drive out. If you have like an ace 4, you want to drive out the ace trays, knowing you're not going to drive out the ace deuces. Ace tray, obviously, you don't want to drive out the ace 4s and ace 5s when you have ace trays. So, from the low standpoint, you probably don't want to drive anybody out. But you got a high hand it's got some possibilities. And really, with this hand, I'm not going for the low. I want the high.
Yeah.
And scoop it without having to worry about it. I wish I had some better suitage going on here. I'm not sure a 10 high flush is what I'm excited about. But here's the thing, too. This guy, from our very small sample size, seems pretty terrible.
Yep.
So I wouldn't mind getting heads up with him with a hand like this, which is pretty speculative. So I'm probably going to raise here.
Yeah, I mean,
it's only a quarter, right?
It's only a quarter. It's a limit, and again, you're raising with a decently quality hand. You have a very good low starting hand. Then you have three broadways. A lot of these cards work together, and even the three works with the ace for a low. So all these cards pretty much work together. There's no real orphans here. So, and again, like you said, you might want to try to get heads up with an inexperienced player who plays just about anything, and then take him to the cleaners if you hit the right flop. So. I don't mind raising here.
Of course, the joke's probably on us. That guy probably played crazy the first hand.
Yeah.
Do like this for the next one.
Right. Well, it's hand of the week, so anything can happen.
All right, well, our hero decides to call. And, I can defend that, too.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing either.
And you just got to be careful with what you're playing here because you haven't put any pressure on anybody. So, you've got to hit it pretty hard. So, it's the cutoff button, and the blinds all surprisingly fold. So, I guess it didn't really matter. We got heads up and saved a quarter. Or cost a quarter, depending if we win.
Yeah.
All right, so we're heads up, and the flop is the Jack of Diamonds, Six of Hearts, Four of Hearts. So we have a low draw and a weak heart draw, and we got one of the Broadway cards that we're missing that we could run a runner with.
Yep.
Our villain does fire out a amazingly quarter bet. Couldn't bet anything more than that, so. But
I don't know if a raise is if you're on a draw that you like and you want to raise, you might get that free card in position that, But in this case, right now you would think you're behind anyway. So raising might get you that free card, but he might 3-bet you and then you don't get the free card because he doesn't know what he's doing or whatever. So I don't mind the call. I'm not going anywhere. I've got the second nut low, and I have a flush draw that could be good if I'm playing the guy who plays any four cards. And like you said, I've got one of my Broadway cards that I need in case it goes runner-runner somehow. So I don't necessarily think a raise is a bad thing, but I'm not doing it.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting because you're right. I mean, I normally would raise here and try to get the free card, particularly because I have that jack there. Maybe I could pick up a king.
Yeah.
Maybe something like that. That gives me a few more outs on the last card. But you're right. If you do that and it doesn't work and the guy keeps betting or bets a D on the next street, then you don't get the free card.
Right.
And at this point, we can just call here and, hope we get a little bit better here and keep the pot kind of manageable. Of course, it's limit here, so it's a little different than pot limit. We probably wouldn't want to bloat the pot too much.
Right.
But again, I guess, both of these streets, I could go either way.
Yep, it's weird.
All right, well, our hero says, I don't feel this was a great flop. I figured a villain very well may have ace-deuce, maybe even ace-ace-deuce, which leaves me drawing terribly thin if they include the nut hearts. The real mystery is whether he has hearts, a straight draw, or both. I don't feel like raising without a nut draw in either direction, so I call. So you're right, it's exactly what you said. You don't have the nut draw either way, so.
The one thing I will say here is, now, this villain's in the blinds, right? Is that what you told me?
No, he was under the gun.
Oh, he's under the gun. Okay, and he raised under the gun?
He did.
Okay, so he raised under the gun in this hand, and then we just called. I was saying before, if I was first in, I'd raise. So I might have just called pre-flop. I'm not sure now.
Okay.
Because you were saying that the other guys all folded, so I was thinking that we were the first into the pot. I forgot this guy wasn't in the blind.
Right.
But still, I don't know if I would have raised knowing that this guy had already raised. I don't think I'm going to 3-bet with this hand. But anyway, I forgot. For some reason, I was thinking it was the hand before that he raised, and then this hand he just was in the blinds. Sorry about that.
All right. So back to where all the rest of us were. here's my problem with... You have to be cognizant that ace-deuce or ace-ace or ace-ace deuce, all these hands he's talking about are out there. But again, based off what we've seen already, I don't know whether we should be as worried about that as I normally would.
Right.
You know, this guy could be... And again, it's a limit, so he could have all kinds of different things here. So I don't think that's the reason not raise. But certainly, I think there's lots of reasons to just call.
And that was my initial... comment was going to be was that I thought this is the guy was in the blinds, and when we were giving him credit for ace deuce, I was thinking, well, I wouldn't give him credit for that because he raised with any cards earlier. Why wouldn't he have raised with ace deuce? But he did raise, so he could have ace deuce here. And like you said, I don't want to be second best both ways, which is like the cardinal sin of this game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't want to blow up the pot. So let's just hope, you know, we hit on the turn a little better for us, and you know, I'd love to see a deuce on a turn.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about having position in this hand and just being able to, you know, check call. I mean, or call down.
Yeah,
call down and hope that we got one or both. I mean, it might end up with both, even with weak on both sides. So, all right. So the turn is the ace of hearts. So our board is the jack of diamonds, six of hearts, four of hearts, ace of hearts. Our weak flush gets there. Our low is counterfeited for now.
Right.
But our villain bets puts out the 50-cent bet. Fold, call, or raise.
I'm just going to call. It's the same argument. Nothing's really changed other than now we don't have a low yet. But, I mean, we have the flush. If he's beating us with the flush, we might still make a better low if he doesn't have, you know, even that. He'd have to have 2-3 in his hand and then 2 hearts, so...
Yeah,
I'm just calling.
Yeah, at this point, I mean, you know, you're right. It's a game of nuts here too. So we've got what, 3 combinations of hearts that could beat us. So there's no reason to think that we're necessarily the best here. So let's not get in a raising war with it. Let's just call down and hopefully he doesn't have hearts. And we take the pot and maybe we'll even get a live 3 out of this.
Yeah.
All right, our hero says, I'm now concerned that I could be crushed both ways, but now it would be by someone with hearts that didn't include the ace. Is it possible that our villain is something like deuce, tray, king, X with the hearts, or is it something like a small rundown, deuce, tray, 4-5, or tray, 4-5-6 with hearts? I'm chopping with at that moment. Would he have raised under the gun with that? Deciding that I might be ahead with the hearts, I decide to call the 3 bet. Oh, I'm sorry. I missed a whole section there. So he raised and then got a 3 bet.
Oh, so we raised with a 10 high flush. Okay. Yeah, I would never have done that. And it's just opening up the betting. Then if he, you know, the guy bets again, now you've got a 10 high flush and no low, and you're calling 3 bets, you know, or whatever. I mean, it's one more bet to you now, but it's a total of 3 bets.
It's 2 more bets.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, so.
That's exactly what the problem is with limit. Because when you get to the river, then you're almost, you got to call on the river because the pot's going to be $5 this time. It's 10-1. And with the hearts, you got to at least take the shot.
Yeah.
But you just added an extra bet to it that you didn't need to.
Right.
At this point. So
Limit poker is about extracting one bet and saving one bet if you can.
Exactly.
Not bloating a pot. Absolutely. With not the nuts.
All right, so the pot is 485. The river brings the 10 of diamonds. So our final board is jack of diamonds, 6 of hearts, 4 of hearts, ace of hearts, 10 of diamonds. No low possible for us, and we don't really improve, and our villain does bet.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing else to do here but call. I mean, I can't fold a 10 high flush based on the way this player played earlier, right? So you're not going to raise with a 10 high flush. It's not going to fold for one more bet, so... You can't get a better hand to fold here, so you're just going to call and lick your wounds when he shows you a better hand.
Yeah, it's about almost just shy of 11-1 on your money here. So this is what it is about limit. You got to call this last bet because you only have to be right, you know, one of those times in 11 times. So, but it hurts knowing that. I mean, I'm making this bet fully expecting that I'm kissing those 2 George Washingtons away. You know. but you have to, because, you know, if you keep folding here, then you're never going to make that money back, because occasionally you're going to be right.
Yep, just think yourself that you sat down on a limit game and make the call. Because if it was pot limit or no limit, you know, you'd you'd have lost a lot more money if you wanted to stick around. So just be happy that it's just one bet and see what happens.
All right, our hero says, I'm concerned that the villain may have a higher flush and I can't claim a low hand, so I'm wondering whether I'm getting scooped, or maybe my hearts are good for half, or is it possible he raised Broadway cards and maybe he flopped a set of jacks or turned a straight draw and I'm actually ahead of him? I almost clicked the fold button, Chris, but I decided to take the chance and call.
Well, the thing is that there is a low for him, for the other player, so that's the other thing you have to take into consideration. You're not really getting 11-1 anymore, you're getting 5-1.
That is true.
Yeah. So you're thinking, or whatever, 5.5-1 or whatever it is, so... Is it still worth the call? I still think it's worth the call at 5.5-1 with one half of this pot, a decent showing of a hand. So this guy could have been betting 2-3 the whole way. You don't know. He could have been betting 2-pair or whatever, but he could ultimately have, you know, king, queen of hearts. Who knows?
And then generally thinking, I mean, we did talk a little bit about this, or at least our hero did about under the gun. What kind of hands traditionally would raise under the gun? You know, obviously this guy's a little crazy, but, you know, if he does have an ace X hand for a low, he probably got counterfeited two here, unless he has a third low card.
Right.
So he's probably out of the running for the low. And if he has an ace like that, I mean, he has to have hearts here really to beat you, or a jack, king, jack, or what? Queen. No. King, queen.
Yeah, only two hearts that are hard enough.
Or actually, no, that's a straight even. So, yeah. So, I mean, it has to be hearts that beat you here. So, even at the 5-1, I think this is fine, because really I think I'm playing for a 10-1 or 11-1.
It feels a lot like a jack of hearts, and this is in this guy's hand, because he had hearts and he had top pair and kept betting it. It feels a lot like he's going to show us something like your favorite hand of jack 9.
Yeah.
You know, it just feels like that. I don't know what the hand is, but it feels like that.
All right, so we do decide to make the call, of course. The villain shows ace of clubs, deuce of diamonds, four of clubs.
Oh, cool.
Four of spades, and we scoop the 556 pot post-rake.
Very cool. Yeah, he got totally counterfeited. He loved that flop for his low, only, though, really. And he got the set, too.
He had a set.
Yeah, so he's looking at pairing the board for a boat, plus he has a set, and... And he has the nut low draw.
Nut flush draw, yeah.
So, yeah, but that goes to show you why you need to call. Because he probably thought his set was still good when he bet.
Oh, sure. Why not? I mean, he kept up the ruse the whole way. I mean, that's when you're at a position limit, that's what you got to do. You got to keep the pressure on and hope that you kind of wear your opponent down.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you're not going to win. If you just check call that, I mean, obviously, you'll save some bets. But the bets that you'll win when you do that are better than the bets that you save when you don't, when your head's up. I mean, it's different multi-way pot where things are out of control. But
yeah.
All right, Jeff, we appreciate you sending in your hand of the week. We are going to send you a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues, including hats, T-shirts, and gifts in the Annie Up Store at annieupstore.com. And remember to send your hands of the week to podcast at annieupmagazine.com, and you too might win something totally awesome.
Don't forget, next week, 7 years doing this show, anniversary show. Please send us your favorite moments via email at podcast@anniatmagazine.com or our hotline, 813-448-1120. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.